Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Hello everybody and welcome to Goldbridge Says Football. Have we got a show for you today? We'll be talking about cease and desist letters from Premier League clubs. We'll also be talking about outrage by me about VAR, also Man United in a mess, the end of the Premier League season, the fall off of Spurs, the sacking or removal or walking away of Moyes. There's so much to get into, Will, and you've been relegated with Birmingham. And Solihull Moor's lost as well, which we were both at.
Yeah, it should have been a terrible weekend, but there's optimism around the relegation. We took Seb to his first game of football, so that was delightful. So in the dark and gloom, there shines a light, and that's what I'm looking at.
Football, that's what we love. It's not always about winning. Oh. You've got to learn, and Seb learned the hard way, but he got a penalty shootout at Wembley. I'm sure you saw the vlog, but it's an early lesson to get the bad side of football early on because it actually enhances the love for it. Right, look, I know a lot of people will be tuning in for the first time. Make sure you give us a follow. If you're on Spotify, give us a 5-star and give us your reviews. We're here every, normally Monday night, it comes out at 5 o'clock, and there's one on a Friday as well while the season's running. But it's been an interesting week, Will. You have a pitch on where this started, but this to me just indicates how dangerous modern social media is and how a rhetoric and story can go out. So we've been doing the podcast for ages. I was speaking about the 115 yep. for Man City last week and said, I don't really want to talk about it anymore, Will, because I actually think that the Premier League has become so dominated by Man City that even if they get found not guilty, that problem still exists.
Well, and there was another clip of you going, oh, the lawyers might get involved. But that was like really like...
tongue-in-cheek.
Very tongue-in-cheek, even for you.
So let's get the facts around this before we get the letter out. This is from a Twitter account last week. Goldbridge sent a cease and desist from Man City, and I couldn't find it any sweeter. The guy has spouted nothing but hate-filled rubbish and hollow accusations relentlessly towards City for over a year. Karma. City will be found not guilty, by the way. Never been so confident after everything we've seen and heard this week. So this is where it sort of started. This account may not be the original, but it had 1.9 million views. So that's where it started, and it seemed to go around the Manchester City fan base.
No, so it started there. Then there was a clip of you saying about the lawyers, and then I didn't think any more of it. And then a Thursday or Friday roll around, and I had messages and DMs off different journalists from different publications.
Yeah.
So then I was like, hang on a minute. What's going on here?
Well, also, there was a news drop on some sort of Man City outlet somewhere that hit on Friday, and it reads like this. News drop. I'll start by making it clear that the following post is not based on confirmed fact. Focus in on that, but because it's bullshit. However, the source from within the club, which this post is based on, has said things in the past that has panned out to be exactly the way it's turned out.
Wow.
Once in July, he said it would be hot, and it was. No, I've made that bit up. But he said that City have successfully cleared their name before Murray Rosen QC and his independent commission panel appointed by the Premier League. The charges have again failed to stand up to scrutiny. City are now working with the Premier League to decide and implement the best exit strategy for the shitstorm and what will unfold once the official announcement is made. It goes on to say that the Premier League must now lie in the hole that it's dug for itself. They had the opportunity to stop, but they carried on. And bigger picture, blah, blah, blah. So
just to interject, the whole backdrop of this as well was that there was a rumour going around on Reddit sites, wasn't there, and different things, that Manchester City have actually been cleared and the Premier League are
working together.
So it was like a bonfire had started.
Yeah.
And then you threw some fuel on it.
I didn't.
No, sorry. Okay. You
We were talking on the podcast. I wanted to move it away from the 115.
Okay, you were near it with a marshmallow.
Yeah.
And then you've actually...
The fire had already started.
And then your marshmallow's gone in and it's actually got very toasted.
Since Monday, I have put some petrol on the fire. I'll be honest.
Yeah, well, that's what we'll come on to in a bit.
Because I've played the game. So basically, what's going on here is that we were talking last week about Man City and the Premier League and saying the 115 will take care of itself.
Yeah.
But there's a bigger issue because if they do get found not guilty or guilty... They've still won multiple Premier League titles. They're still a juggernaut. They've won again at the weekend on cruise control. They're miles ahead of everybody else. And that's a problem that's there with or without the charges. And I think that's a bigger issue because it's a Premier League issue. You've then got social media accounts listening into our podcast and then going, he's had a cease and desist letter, which has then gone around part elements of the mainstream with that post, which has been proved to be inaccurate by other journalists saying it's not true that Man City have been cleared. Yeah. I think Mike Keegan has said that. And then I must admit, over the weekend, it got to a point where I thought on the podcast today, we would get the cease and desist letter out, which I have in my hands here now. And if you are on audio, it's basically invisible because there is no cease and desist letter. And I don't think there ever would be from any football club because... The 115 charges, it's not defamation. They have been charged. If somebody's out there going, guilty, guilty, they're guilty, they're guilty, even then, some people might have read what the charges are and feel that they are guilty. But the reality is, we haven't had one. But what it does go to show, Will, is that this is the world we live in now where people can do videos and put tweets out and spread messages out there that just are simply fantasy.
Well, also, let's spin a positive light on it. Like the publications that I've had messages from actually does restore your faith in that there actually is good journalism out there because people go to the source.
Oh, yeah, we've been contacted by a lot of people. And in fairness, I must just say, in fairness to Manchester City, although they officially can't say anything, they have sort of put it out to other people to say, look, this is a nonsense. And look, I don't like Man City because they're Man United's biggest rivals. I don't like Man City because it's boring. Some people would say, well, it was very similar when Man United were dominating, but it was a very different thing. I actually am less and less inclined to talk about the 115 simply because it's a little bit playground. I actually want to talk about the issues of the Premier League, whether it's VAR, whether it's the injury crisis, whether it's the dominance of Man City, whether it's newly promoted teams getting relegated. I think the Premier League's losing its shine and it's the Premier League's responsibility to change that. I even said last week, I'd let Newcastle spend the money Man City have just to have another team competing with them. So I think it's multi-layered, but there has been no cease and desist letter. And the reason I sort of, you know, fed it a little bit over the weekend was because a bit of a society experiment, really, that there are people out there that just put nonsense out, specifically about me a lot, but also everybody else.
And just me.
And that's Will. That's just Will on his burners. But it's not, you've got to be very, very wary. I talk about this a lot. Like there are accounts out there that are like, I don't know, Kevin De Bruyne's left boot. It could be an Arsenal fan who's 6 years old from Australia. Well, that was never me. Why would I even have a burner? But I've had a burn account the week before. I've had a cease and desist letter. I mean, God knows what next week's going to be.
You're on your watch along saying you weren't a nonce, so you cleared that up.
I might be related to bloody...
Prince William?
Yeah, he's my long-lost brother.
And he's a Villa fan.
That'll get clipped. You see, I've got to be very, very careful.
Cease and desist from the royal family.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then you're on a podcast with Matt Letizia talking about Princess Diana's bodyguard and Johan Cruyff and stuff like that. And then you're in a whole world
of trouble.
I'm about
to cancel that now.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's a lot of very bitter, angry people out there who can't deal with sarcasm, wit and intelligence. So they sort of fall into this category of starting something and they sort of revel in it. And then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm like, there's just literally no truth in it at all.
Yeah, I mean, you were egging a lovely cake. Maybe you did slightly over-egg it Monday when you said that the cease and desist letter, I'll bring it on Tuesday.
Well, I have brought it. Yeah. Here it is. It's an imaginary letter, just like the people who started the imaginary story. Yeah. Like, if they want to play the game, we'll play the game. Like, you can't... The person who put that tweet out and the people who started saying he's definitely... You're making it up.
But also,
good journalism and good conversation is based upon, you know, Man City are dominating this league. They're a juggernaut because they've got the best manager, the best players, the best infrastructure, the least injuries, the most money. That is based on fact and evidence. You can't just keep throwing out lies out there. And look, I challenge everybody to have an opinion. Of course I do. Disagree. Of course I do. But you can't defeat people with lies. And I was saying this about Ten Hag. People want Ten Hag out and they're putting his face on a clown and they're calling him a bold fraud. And I'm like, you've got ample ammunition to say why Ten Hag needs to be sacked. Why are you swimming in the gutter? And I think this is what worries me about social media these days, is that it needs to be fact-checked, it needs to be called out, and they don't like it when someone plays the game back, and that's all I've done at the weekend.
But on a deeper point, while social media exists, there's always going to be these two elements of news. There's like, you can either wait to get this sort of authentic thing from the publications that we've mentioned about in the football world, that's The Athletic and maybe some other news organisations, or you can sort of dwell on these, like you said, Kevin De Bruyne's left boot or whichever one it was. Like, even in the Blues camp, there was a handle which was called I can't remember what it was called anyway, random account. And they said, I've heard Ethan Laird doesn't want to play for Blues anymore. He's off to Germany. Just one account.
Yeah.
Get to the game thingy, meeting a few people. What do you reckon about Ethan Laird going off to Germany? I was like, what? Like, some bloke in has just tweeted that, and now it's come. And I've done it as well. You get it with news, or like you hear, oh, this person's done that, and then that's your opinion, isn't it? It's like we've got to learn how to be better with how
we can,
and
it is difficult because you want to believe stuff.
Biased about someone, and then you see it, right, he must be a dick.
It reminds me of my mum with Baby Spice. She absolutely couldn't stick Baby Spice, which is an 80s way of saying, I can't stand them. You said, I can't stick him, or I can't stick her, and came from the 80s.
Baby Spice was probably the nicest one.
She just couldn't stand Baby Spice. She'd be like, get that off, I can't stand her. And it was just literally, she probably just didn't like the look of her.
Right.
And then she saw an interview and she went, oh, she's actually really down to earth. Yeah. And I was like, this people just get... And now if it had a tweet, it had gone around about Baby Spice hating mother care.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't want, you know...
I'd have sworn she'd have gone for Halliwell.
Yeah.
Out front and centre, left the group early.
Had her boobs out before she was in Spice Girls. Nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying my mum might not
maybe
like
your mum liked it.
I don't know. Maybe that was a positive. I don't know. But my point is, I'll get another cease and desist from my mum. But the thing is, it is very, very dangerous, of course. And you do, we get it in the football transfer world. Like, I saw something the other day, it was in the Manchester Evening News about I think it was Todibo or Elise. United got linked to them and they went, as reported by us 2 weeks ago, Man United are in for Elise. And I was like, but I know we've been in for Elise for months.
Yeah, yeah.
So they wrote an article about it 2 weeks ago, and then they go, as reported by us 2 weeks. I mean, they're not telling a lie. They did report it 2 weeks ago, but it makes it look like they're the source of this story when actually it was out months ago. And it's this people just want clicks and tweets, don't they?
Yeah, but that's where you've got I need to do better myself and stuff. And like, if you see things that you want to believe, and then that becomes fact in your head, like there almost needs to be a hierarchy in your own mind of like things that you trust.
A tier list.
You know, when a tragedy happens, unless for me it's on BBC News, I don't believe it until I've seen it on there.
Well, I actually think, you know, regardless, we've cleared up this whole bloody letter bollocks, it's nonsense. But what the biggest one for me, which has probably got missed in all that, was this news drop that Man City had been cleared and the Premier League and Man City were trying to keep it quiet whilst they find a way to steer through this and release it without all a big load of trouble. Now, people want to believe that. I respect Man City fans for wanting to believe that they'd been found not guilty, and maybe they will get found not guilty. But obviously, proper journalists then have to go and put a tweet out saying, I understand the story that Man City being found not cleared is not true. Well, but loads of people have read that and believed it, and I feel sorry for those people because they want that good news, don't they? Like, if I said to you, Will, have you seen the news? I mean, I did think about doing it. Have you seen the news that Blackburn are going to get 5 points deducted because they put the wrong shirt number on one of their players or
brilliant,
something like that?
That's fantastic.
You'd start going, Blackburn cheats, and I'd go, Will, it was a joke.
Oh,
it was
did.
A joke.
You
and but you'd want to believe that, wouldn't you?
Well, so, even at the I actually had it in the flesh at the weekend. So I think it was some of the Norwich fans said that Hull had scored, and then it literally went round the whole way, and then I shouted Hull had scored, and then everyone, and so that was Chinese whispers in the flesh, and ultimately
and that's what social media is, isn't it? And I just think
social media is Chinese whispers.
You've got to be responsible for what you believe, and there's a lot of crap out there, and I think it's getting worse with things like AI and stuff. There's a lot of people who run accounts just to wind people up. Like, and
I was actually off side point, actually. I saw that, is it Terry Flirt? And then he did that picture of you And you were like, where's your graphic designer? And I thought, you only want that because he's made you look a bit younger and nicer.
I did like that picture. Yeah,
because it makes you look really good.
He had told me the graphic designer, although he has done a video about this. So, you know, everybody wins at the end of the day. So that's that.
I should have done a video.
We can talk about Man City, of course, but a straightforward win for them. Let's talk about my club,
Manchester United.
To be fair, I watched Man United play last night. I watched Solihull Moors on Sunday. There was one team that was a better footballing side.
One team was bloody fighting for it, weren't they?
Yeah, Solihull Moors played really well in the National League final, but big up Bromley, they deserved it. You wanted to talk about my outrage on VAR?
I had a night off the football after the weekend I'd had last night, so I was just sitting down, just scrolling through Twitter. I had about three people message me saying, can you please message Mark? We think he's lost the plot.
I think that's up there. You know, when I retire and they go Goldbridge's top 10 outrages or ragers?
Yeah.
That.
You should release it like a Danny Baker VHS style.
But I genuinely think that's probably the worst one. It might not be the worst one.
And has that been fueled by alcohol?
It was fueled by alcohol. Down the forest, I'd had four Peroni, and then I poured what I thought was a medium glass of red, but it lasted most of the first half.
Medium, so
it was
glass, probably in a
half
pint glass.
A pint. Yeah. Half a pint. It was drink. I mean, I'd had a right go at everyone. I'd gone in on Carragher, Samuel Lucas.
Sometimes that's just an average stream, though.
I was pontificating about everything, probably mentioned the letter again. But no, I threw my chair over. I thought I broke my light. I was fuming. And wasn't even about Man United losing.
Well,
it was,
I think that's where you've probably struck a chord still, because it is, you know, you are banging. Even when you're in the depths of your drunkest, you're still banging the drum for VAR and getting it right.
Saving football. But look, it fell on deaf ears because it's United. People go red tinted glasses. And, you know, the more you scream and shout, the more they go, yeah, you're being biased. But look, even United fans said it wasn't a foul. But I want to bring a different angle into this today, because I was on TalkSport this morning and Jeff Stelling said, oh, you were furious last night throwing your chair around about United losing. I went, no, Jeff, I expected Man United to lose, and we'll talk about Ten Hag in and all that in a moment. But the reason I was throwing my chair around was VAR. I'm absolutely at the end of my tether. And the response I got was, well, that's a minor point in the context of what's happening with United. And I think this is the big problem, isn't it? We tribalise it. We trivialise it. I might have had a few drinks last night, but my mind was sharp. And I said, basically, it's a 50-50 ball that Rasmus has gone for with his arms down and Henderson's gone up with his hands up.
Yeah.
And he falls in the goal like he's been punched by The Undertaker. And all I'm thinking is James Trafford, Burnley, Luton gets basically assaulted, goes to VAR, that's a goal. Vicario, countless times this season, knocked over, goal. Arsenal, countless times since January, corner routines, pushing goalkeepers, goal. And then they change the rules again this weekend and go, no, you can't touch the goalkeeper. Now, in December, I would have said, it's really soft, but that's a foul on Henderson. But for the last 3 months, that's not been a foul. And you get fans going, no, it's always a foul. And I think you absolute cretins, in the nicest possible way, because this is what we're fighting against. This is the beautiful game. We were at Bromley Solihull. I subconsciously thought on the drive home, what a game of football. No VAR. You know, there was a dodgy goal maybe.
For the first one,
he got a push. That would have been reviewed.
There's also a level of understanding when you go into the game knowing, right, because even when we go down next year, apparently there's no goal line technology. So you just go into the game with those parameters.
Yeah.
But you still have those debates. But they're not as vicious because there's not this 3 minute, 4 minute wait and it's just done with, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look, the first goal for Bromley, I think it could have been a foul in the Premier League. But you sort of go, might have been a foul, might not have been a foul, but the referee said no foul.
Yeah.
You know there's no review, so you just get on with it. And it's quite a refreshing thing to know it's an injustice or know you're not going to get a review on it. But I just think that it's time for pundits. This is what I wanted to talk about on the show today. You know, if you want to start a movement, if you want to get behind something or you want to debate something with your mates, with your missus, with your boyfriend, with your dog, with yourself in the mirror, why are pundits not willing to talk? I detected this on TalkSport this morning.
I said
I was furiously kicking a chair over because VAR. Well, we don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about Man United. Half time yesterday, Sky only brought it in at the very, very end on the last break. Pundits, the Arsenal game was atrocious. It was a red card on Saka.
Yeah.
They went for a drop ball. I don't believe it was a foul on Raya. I definitely don't think it was a penalty for Havertz. Arsenal deserved to win the game, but there was three atrocious decisions. Man United deserved to lose the game, but there was an atrocious decision in it. And I'm tired of this. Like, football is the beautiful game. We saw it at Wembley. Two non-league clubs trying to get into the league. Passionate fans on both sides. We see it week in, week out in the Premier League, the best league in the world. It's disgusting. And people should not be wearing a club shirt for this. This should be a united fan base of everybody saying, well, Wolves got done there. Everton, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City. We're all getting done. We're all losing out here. And why is it these pundits, ex-players who've earned money out of the game and been adored by football fans, why are they toeing the party line and not calling it out?
No, but I think it comes back to what I was mentioning last week. A lot of them have not been actual fans for so long. So, like, they've either played the game and gone straight into punditry. Well, even if you are a fan, there's still a level of, like, you're not going home in a way. You're not really in tune with the fan base because, you've been an ex-player. So I think there's that. I think the main reason for that is there's a level of just... they're just not in it. They're not in it every day. They've never been in it, and I don't think that they can be. So they're not really in tune with the fan base. And then you get very... And also, when you got Sky Sports, especially with TalkSport, they're entertainment products, aren't they? So if Man United have just lost 4-0, there's only going to be one narrative that's coming from that game, and it's going to be about Ten Hag and sacking him. It's not going to be about the 2-0 when Rasmus scored and it was a dodgy decision, is it?
What frustrates me is that when you look at someone like Lineker, who's blocked me on Twitter, and you look at someone like Neville, who won't do any content with me, and you look at, you know, maybe Carragher is the same, I don't know. And it's almost like they think podcasts like this, That's Football, United Stand, when they're mentioned, oh, we're just poking them. They're just poking us for a reaction and we're not going to react. Don't react, just ignore it. We're not. When someone's on Twitter saying, I can't believe the shit Michael Owen's talking next to Howard Webb, or I can't believe what he said on TalkSport, or I can't believe they're not talking about that on Sky, we're not poking them because you're rich or you've been a footballer or anything like that. We're not poking you. We're trying to make you hear that you have the platform to do what we're doing on a much bigger scale. If a Gary Neville or a Jamie Carragher went, you know what? Enough is enough at this stage. I watched the Arsenal game, three horrific decisions. I've seen that foul on Henderson that's not been given for 3 months and suddenly it's being given again. It's not acceptable. We're not poking them. Look, more than happy to have a conversation with them. If they're scared of doing that, that's up to them. But what would be nice if they just actually listened and went, ping, I'm actually going to go on a big rant the next time I'm on Monday Night Football, or the next time I'm in the gantry. I'm going to actually stick up for the fans and say, it's not about Liverpool. It's not about Man United. That's a red card on Saka. How does VAR look at that and give a drop ball? Havertz, I've played the game. Well done. He's dragged his foot on purpose to win a penalty. We've seen penalties not given for less, and that's been given. It's not acceptable. How can 8 people look at it and not give it? That Rasmus on Henderson thing. Look at James Trafford. Look at Vicario. These goals have been given for ages. Why is it happening? And I just don't think that they're listening, like you say. And also, we're not poking you. We want you to speak for us in a platform that is completely and utterly coming across as dictatorial and propaganda. Like, they're sweeping it under the carpet and it's getting worse. And I feel so frustrated as a football fan, Will. I really do.
I think the worrying thing as well is in terms of, like, this space on YouTube, like, also they're encroaching on that territory as well. And you know, look at the podcast charts as well. That's previously been dominated by either, like, independent speakers. Like, I still have the Football Ramble. No, the guy doesn't love you, unfortunately. But YouTube, like, you've got so many great people that we've worked with. But you look at the podcast charts, you look at the YouTube space with Neville coming into it, Lineker's company coming into it as well. Like, they're going to sort of start swamping that. So if you have got your favourite creator out there, you have got your favourite podcast that's not from the mainstream or from the typical pundit, I'd say this is a really good time to support it. And if it is us, that's fantastic. But there is that wave.
Yeah, there are others out there.
There is that wave of mainstream coming into what were independent and new voices. And for the next generation of us, it's like, well, how do you make a wave then? And then it's like, so many young creators now are like, he's fucking shit, or he's this. So then it's like, well, I feel it's a bit stuck at the moment.
I think this is a great point. And it's a podcast, so we're going to talk about Man United and other stuff in a moment. But I do want to drill into this just for a couple of minutes more, because I think you're so right and you're so important. We know, because we operate in this industry, that the way it's heading is terrifying. There is an encroachment, quite rightly, from well-funded ex-players into this social media world, and they've got a lot of money and they've got a lot of contacts and they've got a lot of ins and they've got a lot of good content, but they're no different to the Skies and the TNCs and everybody else in their approach. It's very media centric. And what we desperately need is, and I would love to see an episode of Stick to Football where Ian Wright, Roy Keane, Gary Neville sat there away from Sky and went, you know what, we might not be able to say it on the mainstream, but if they sack us all, they sack us all. This season has been an absolute car crash. It's a disgrace. Some of the officiating is bordering on negligent. It's sinister. It's destroying. But you know what, Roy? Beyond all that, it's destroying the game for the fans. The fans are absolutely... I mean, look, when you're throwing a chair around and you're hitting a light... and it's because of a VAR decision. There's something very, very wrong. And
well, it was almost the four Peronis as well.
And the four Peronis. But it genuinely was a despair of this. It's the inconsistency, Will.
Yeah, that's the
thing. When you can... Look, I was even joking. PGMOL have warned me once before. They might be coming for me again. Bring it on. I will love that because the court will be full. They'll be full.
Get it next to the next season.
Put it in Wembley. We'll do the court case in Wembley because we'll pack it out absolutely 100,000 people and they'll all be cheering... Maybe not for me, but they'll be cheering for the
we'll
fact that
you,
I'd sit there and go, what's your problem with me going mad then? Because I'm right. The reason I used the James Trafford thing is because I knew I was right. I knew.
Then they get the big clip on the screen.
Yeah.
Burnley and Luton!
Yeah.
Burnley and Luton!
Yeah.
And everyone will be like, oh, come on.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, what? All right, I was angry, but it's true. And I'm like, ooh, it's so frustrating because I do not want to see the propaganda, and I do not want to see the desensitization, you know what
I mean.
Basically, if they wander into YouTube and TikTok and stuff, which they will, they've got the money, they've got the resources, you're just going to end up like rabbits being fed lettuce, which is basically what Sky and TNT and everybody else has to do because it's what the people at the top want to do. There's some fantastic people working at Sky and TNT and TalkSport, brilliant people who are aware of modern media. But unfortunately, like in anything, I had this in policing, I had it in banking. Stereotypically, the people at the top of the business will be in their 50s and 60s, and they don't understand TikTok and the way the conversation's going. So yes, definitely support your independents because they're going to become more contracted. And it does force those independents to start looking at maybe AFTV 7 years ago and go, get this fraud out my club. And that just makes the job even easier for the likes of Neville and co, because it's like, look at these idiots. What you need to have is an independent voice, and we need more independent voices talking about the things that we're talking about and you're talking about in a way where, look, that door is open. Lineker could be sat here. Neville could be sat here. Carragher could be sat here. And the conversation would be viral. But they don't want it, because I don't know why they don't want it, but it's not about poking them. It's about...
Yeah, but from
I'd be running around with my top off if Carragher just put a tweet out saying VAR needs to be turned off. It's an absolute disgrace.
But to play devil's advocate, for them to sit in a room like this, they'd just go back through like some of your old tweets and be like, you have poked them a bit in the past. And like, why would they bother coming down here? Do you know what I mean? But I know I agree with you, it'd be great. But like, if someone lower down from you in the sort of YouTube pecking order, and you went back through their tweets and they were like, I think you said Carragher to get sacked once.
Yeah.
So you'd just be like, well, why would I bother?
Yeah. But that's just childish immaturity. You know, at the end of the day, I talk to people. I did a video with a Man City fan who's been a complete prick to me for years.
No,
I shook his hand and said, let's get on.
Well, you and the Don had had beef.
But for me, that's just childish. And maybe a lot of footballers are like that because it's a competitive world. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can't deal with people criticising you, and you're going to judge people like that. Anyway, we've digressed. But look, get your comments in all that, because I think I just genuinely am at the point with VAR now where I'm like, the mainstream are in bed with the PGMOL. They've got a relationship. We all know that. And maybe they want to protect each other. But the pundits, you're the reason we love football.
Just to digress even further, it's scary from like, you know, when we go to like the YouTube things and it's like, you know, the one I went to last time, and it's just all focused on, we've got this brand new partner from La Liga, we've been doing this thing with it, and it's all just focused on the the big wigs, the established sort of like from what YouTube used to be. And I understand that from a level of business, but that sports day that I went to, it was literally just all focused on rights holders, the big creators. And it's like, well, the beauty of the platform is that you can get a voice like yours, or even from the origins of the Sidemen and vice versa, and it just feels like that even that's going away from it.
Look, if you're watching this far, we're about to talk about the football, but make sure you give us a follow, give us the 5 stars on Spotify, get your comments in, because I think that we're heading towards a very interesting 12 months across this industry, and outlets like this and communities, not about us, communities like you are so important. Your opinions are so important.
That's why we're charging £8 a day for our brand new podcast
app.
Yes. Get involved.
Get a picture of me in my kitchen every day for £8 on the app. There is no app.
It'd be good if you could do one of them puzzle ones, if you could take away a slice each time and then reveal a little bit more. Would you be naked under the... Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
Let's talk about football, Will. I know you want to talk about Manchester United.
Stick to football.
Let's talk about them. Manchester United, I shouldn't be leading this conversation. You should be leading it, but another loss. I suppose I would ask you, from an outsider looking in...
Well, it just looks like an absolute shitstorm, doesn't it? In terms
is it on
of...
the manager? Is it on the players?
I feel yesterday was definitely on the manager in terms of the coaching. And the one thing that I completely understand the argument of keeping Erik ten Hag in the job, because one, there's no good alternatives out there. Two, the players will get almost rewarded for being a sack of shit like they have done. But yesterday felt like a real line in the sand in terms of there's this constant narrative against ten Hag from me that what is the Manchester United way? And I understand there's so many injuries, but that just looked like a team that had, one, lost playing for the manager, two, was just absolutely disjointed, and three, didn't have a clue what they were doing out there.
Well, I respect that, and I really implore a lot of you don't support Man United, so please do get in on the comments if you're on Spotify or on YouTube. I really want to... Don't just say sack the bold fraud. We'll probably get 100 like that now, but I do read the comments, and I'd be really interested to know what your external observation is. From we talk about football on here. You know, my shitstorm rant was about VAR. It wasn't about Man United. We deserve to lose against Palace. So we can be passionate about things that don't involve our club. So let us know what your thoughts are on Ten Hag. All I would throw back at you, Will, as we play this verbal game of tennis, is that, and this is going to be straight down the line, you know, you're going to have to dive to get at this one. And then it will go up in the air and I'll smash it into your face.
No, you'll put it in the net.
But I would, could fluff it, yes. Or fall over the net in a comedic way.
Yeah.
And break my face.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Being violent today. I think it was that day at Wembley with Seb.
No, it'd be the
who genuinely believes he's been banned from Wembley.
Right.
If you've not watched the vlog, he smashes a chair up.
We did say there was a security guard looking at him as well.
But I think that the only thing I would say about last night is that I've seen it all before with United. I've seen it with Ranier, Kunderoli. And I have done a bit of coaching, and I've also played a bit of football. I'm sure you have, as I'm sure everybody else. And
You're putting your name in the hat.
I've played in a game where we wanted to get rid of a manager when we were 14 because it was someone's dad, and then there was someone else who wanted to coach us. And we really didn't want to listen to what he was doing, so we didn't. I got the sense with United last night that you could put Pep Guardiola in charge and you wouldn't really get to a point where Crystal Palace don't win the game because you've got Eriksen in the midfield who looks like he's retired. Casemiro was the captain, which I didn't even realise till this morning, who was an absolute disgrace. Onana in goal was a joke. Wan-Bissaka at left. It was just like, it was like the uncoachables. It was like they all went rogue. And I think we've seen it all before at United. And I think the greatest point you made is that if this is, Ineos have got a big decision to make. I think in the past, and many other people listening will have had this with their club, when you look at like Spurs and West Ham have just done it, bad results happen. You get a decision. You can sack a manager. And that's a logical thing to do. And I think West Ham will be a different team next year, and there might be a better team, there might be a worse team. But with Manchester United, we have done this 5 times. We've actually sacked the manager.
Yeah.
The players go, ooh, switch on, you know, and they do well. And I think United fans are just tired of that. And it's almost, I sense in the United fan base that, yes, Ten Hag may well need to be sacked, but let's wait a year, because to send a message to these players for once that this will not, you know, we're not sacking the manager and letting you have another chance. It might be a little bit counterproductive. Some might say, in a footballing sense, it might be a bit perverse, but it's sort of sadistic in a sense to go, no, let's keep this guy that might not be the right guy to get rid of these guys.
I think that they should keep him just because of the limited choice out there. Like, you're not bringing in, there's no answer out there, is there? Everyone's throwing out the question, who's better than Ten Hag? There's no answer. So why would you do that to yourself unless Ineos is so, I don't know if they're like data-driven, but there's an aura with Ineos, isn't it? Well,
they might just want their own guy.
Yeah, they might want their own guy, and then there's a process and there's a method to the madness in terms of like what they want to do, and they want to implement that strongly.
Do you see anyone out there that you'd go, yeah, like a Tuchel or a De Zerbi or an Amorim, that you'd go, yeah, that would be a good manager to bring in?
Yeah, big time.
Who?
You know. Where's the waistcoat?
You see, he ruined everything now.
Why?
Southgate.
Well, I generally think he would do a better job than...
just can't deal
and
with that.
Crystal Palace inside out, because he used to play for him. So, no, I think...
Stick, I'll get us a draw at Palace.
Yeah, exactly. I think stick with Ten Hag. I think it sends that message. And also, you know, we could come on to what Carragher said about Casemiro, but Man United need to change their recruitment focus dramatically.
Real Madrid will be laughing into their coffee.
But yeah,
but that's true
because they're out of those waters at the moment, and they can swim back into them, but they ain't going to do it by spending 350 grand a week on a luxury boat. You need to get your a little dinghy, then maybe work yourself up to a catamaran, then you can get your luxury yacht. But at the moment, they're going luxury yacht, and they're trying to go up Bromsgrove Canal, which, let me tell you, has the most amount of locks for the smallest amount of canal in the whole of the UK.
It's, you know what it's like, the way I look at United is it's not nice. It's like losing both your legs, and then tomorrow you want to win the marathon. You know,
you could still do that in the wheelchair marathon.
Yeah, but or you could find a couple of legs, get used to walking again, then get used to jogging, and then maybe you might run a marathon. It's going to take a period of time. I think in United's fan base, and I see it all the time, and I heard it on the radio this morning, he shouldn't be allowed on the bus. Make him walk back to Manchester with his P45 in his pocket. And I thought, for an angry, toxic person, at least their experience of what a P45 is says a lot. If you don't know what a P45 is, you've basically been sacked.
Yeah.
Which I think that caller had probably been from every job he'd ever had, because he sounded very angry. But it's like, I think the way to frame this is to go, how long do you think it's going to take for Man United to challenge Man City?
Three, four years.
Yeah. And that for me is if everything goes right. Yeah, if Ineos make every decision right, like, you know, dream manager, sell the players, bring the right players in, you're still talking 3 or 4 years.
And then you're also at the mercy of where you are at the moment, is if you bring up a good player who's talented, like a Mainu, well, he's just dibs for Real Madrid, Man City, PSG, Barcelona.
And that's what I mean. If everything went right, you know, you sell your players, you bring your players in, you keep those players, you build consistency, you build a rhythm. I think from this point, you're talking 3 full seasons before you compete with Man City, if everything goes right. If everything doesn't go right, you might be talking 5 to 10 years. So when you've got these fans going, sack the manager, yeah. For West Ham, that might work quite quickly because they've, you know, it might work.
Even
it might
them,
not.
It's not
much, it might work, it might not. But for Man United, sack the manager is no longer a solution. It can be part of it.
Yeah.
But my fear is you bring in the next manager, and in 18 months, it's not going well. And then you go, get rid of him. There has to be a patience at some point. So why not have that patience with this one?
But also, there's been so many examples recently of, like, you know, Arteta's the prime example where there was so much pressure on him and he managed to turn it around. And now it's showing evidence, because it's just that we've mentioned it so many times. It's just that basic thing of clarity, of going into a transfer window with 18 months under your belt of, like, right, these positions aren't working. And even in, like, Ten Hag's weekend went from absolutely great to shit, didn't it? Because Friday, the
PR
interview he did with Gary Neville, good PR. I think you were pleased, with the responses, and the fan base was sort of like taking a step on it. And then you have this result on Monday, so it's just... But then you have to zoom out, don't you? It's like an index fund if you're an investor. You're not in it for the short rises, the big rise over long. And I don't know... Is this year an improvement from last year?
No, definitely not. But football's so funny, isn't it? Because, like, on Sunday, I said we'll lose to Palace. When the team came out, I said we'd probably ship 3 or 4. And we did.
Yeah.
But then people instantly fall back into the get rid of him sort of stuff. And it's like nothing's changed from the interview we did on Friday.
No.
And the prediction was we would get beat quite comfortably. But the defeat, people can't deal with.
But then to me, that even probably... further shows it is the players because of, like, just your resignation to knowing that they're not going to turn up on a Monday night football.
Well, if you know football as well, if Arsenal played Crystal Palace away and they had no Declan Rice, no Saliba, no Gabriel, no Saka, and more than that. United have got more than that. And you're playing, you know, you're playing Partey at centre back with an injured, I don't even know what their fifth choice centre back is.
Yeah, at 52.
You're going to go, well, Crystal Palace have got a right back, a left back, two centre backs. Yeah. They've got a structure. You're probably going to lose. So look,
while we're talking about Palace, let's actually shine. If we're saving football, they are doing it very well.
Yeah.
New manager playing fantastic football. Ibirizi, Elisa, Mateta's turned into absolutely prime R9.
Wharton, the young lad.
Wharton, yeah, absolutely dominating. So they've been on an absolute run. So
they're a dangerous team, though, aren't they? This happens, like, they're a dangerous team. It happened with Hodgson last year when he came in towards the end. When you've got a team and you can put out 11 players who can all play in a position and they're Premier League experienced. And also those sort of teams are used to working hard because they're never going to be a team that has 70% possession at Anfield. Yeah. They're a really dangerous team to play when you're up against teams that are, you know, switching off or got injuries. I think Palace, their big problem is going to be keeping older players. But let's open up the conversation because I think we want to talk about Spurs. Villa lost, Spurs lost, Newcastle and Chelsea winning really well. Both Newcastle and Chelsea and Brighton have struggled this season with injuries, but in these last few weeks, Newcastle's back four at the weekend wasn't very good, but you've still got Hall, who's a left back, Liveramento is a right back, Kraft, I think, is a fullback who's moved in next to Dan Byrne, who's a fullback who's moved in, but it's still a back four that can function, and they've really done well at sort of getting an 11 players out that can form a bit of chemistry, a bit of structure. And they're sort of picking teams off, and Chelsea have done the same. That's not Chelsea's best team, but Cucurella is a left back.
Yeah.
They can put a team out, and I think at this stage of the season, because people are switching off and some teams are tired and some people are injured, Newcastle and Chelsea have shown that, and Brighton against Villa, they've sort of weathered the storm and they've got a bit of something to work towards. I mean, look, Newcastle-Chelsea, it's them for sixth for me. If they get that sixth place, horrible season, but Europa League football for one of those two, when it was looking like no European football, is actually not a bad thing for the season.
Well, yeah, but I disagree with the Newcastle stuff because I think that back line you could probably put on par with Man United in terms of the injuries. You can. Emil Kraft,
come on,
playing centre back.
Casemiro.
Dan Byrne played. Last time I saw Dan Byrne play centre back was against Nottingham Forest.
Well, he is a bloody centre back.
Yeah, Chris Wood turned into absolutely R9 against him.
Come on.
Made him look like R9.
Newcastle's back four.
I think it just shows that Eddie Howe is a really a good coach. And also, they're going up against a Burnley side who would be fighting for their lives because they've got themselves back into a place where they could get
that
out
was
of
a brilliant
the
result. Yeah, but you look at that Newcastle team, you look at their midfield and you look at their back four.
They're coming into a team and knowing exactly what they're doing and their roles.
They're playing for the club.
Yeah, exactly. But
if you want the truth, it's back to the players again, isn't it? Those Newcastle players are doing their job for their team,
and
they're motivated. Yeah, well, a coach will always be a good coach if the players do what the coach asks them to do, and they are, and that's always been Eddie Howe's strength.
But then
the problem at Man United is they're rogue.
Yeah, but then on the other side of it, like Big Ange, you're obviously, you know, famous in this parish, but
their team and squad's amazing.
I look back to that, the first 70 minutes, just the way that they were like not tracking back. It was like, and obviously that identity so clear. So when you don't stick to it, like the holes absolutely appear so clearly, don't they? And like passing out from the back is part of modern game, but the way that they were like, they were just getting caught every time, weren't they? And there's got to be a point where you...
What do you think the problem is with Spurs? And again, everybody at home, get in the comments because I've got a theory that might just break the podcast on this. Don't nick it because you know it. He's going to go, well, I think it's this.
I think
I'll storm out. I'll start throwing cameras.
I think they've overachieved to a certain point of the season and like they're probably going to end up where we all thought that they were.
I still think fifth place, if they get it, is a great season for them. I didn't put them in the top eight.
Yeah, so I think they're still overperforming. It's just come off the back of an absolutely big run of results and they're just underperforming.
I think the scary thing for Spurs, though, is I've got a few points for you to come back on. The scary thing is fifth place is really good for them, but if United, Chelsea and Newcastle hadn't been decimated by injuries and had a... I mean, they're not that far off. So Spurs... might be a little bit fortunate to be in fifth place, because Villa are 7 points ahead.
I disagree with that, because I think Ange is a very good coach and a good manager, and yes, they're on a bad run of form, but
I don't blame Ange. That's what I'm going to come to that.
No, but I think he could prove his worth he could be better than Pochettino. He could prove to be better than Ten Hag, and like this season, he's really put his marker down in that.
I think second season, I mean, next season is going to be so exciting when you think about the new Liverpool coach and how they're going to do, but second season for Ange is massive. I mean, he might not be the manager next year, or he might be really, really good. But I was listening on the way back from Wembley. Seb was tucking into his wine gums on his little iPad, and I had Talk Sport on, and Pardew was on. And I've never really been that impressed with Pardew, but I've never really disliked him. And he came out, you know, obviously he's managed at the top level. People might think he's a bad coach, but, you know, even Michael Owen will come out with something sensical at one point. And he basically was talking about Spurs, and he said, you know what I think it is? I've been around football all my life, and you get types of players. And there are players out there that a new manager comes in, they want to work hard, and for 6 months they'll play really well.
Yeah.
But then they'll revert to type. And the problem with Spurs is, and it's very much the same with Man United, I call them light switch players. For 6 months, the light's on and everything looks great. And you go, we're going to get in the Champions League. I mean, people were even saying at the start of the season, Spurs might win the league. Obviously, for the last 3 months, they've reverted to type, which is, how have Spurs lost 4 in a row? I mean, they don't have the injuries everyone else has got. Their bench is really strong. Apart from Adoghi, that is their best team. But they're playing like it's inexplicable how bad they've been, and they're not creating chances anymore. So I think that is an identity that, and to be fair to Ange, I think at the start of the season, he was very positive, wasn't he? He was like, at the end of the day, mate, just get out there and play your football, even if you've got 11 idiots.
That's Gersh, your best one of the season, yeah. That as well.
Whereas now he's going, at the end of the day, I need players.
Oh, yeah.
I need some good players to come in. That. Yeah. And I think he's learned what Spurs is all about. So I think he needs to clear some players out, bring some players in. And look, I don't know enough about Spurs, but I would say the likes of Højbjerg and... it's hard to know who the Spurs
players...
That's
what I mean. You've got to be... He's
been there
a
long time. But that was my point. If you, at Man United, I can give you 15 players that need to go. At Spurs, it's hard to go, well, you're not going to get rid of Son. I like Kulusevski. Richarlison's only just gone there.
Sarri,
Basuma. Yeah, it's hard to know who those players are, but that needs to change. But look, this was what I was going to say as well.
What I was going to say was that, no, I was just going to nick your point.
It would have been funny if you had. Yeah. I'd have really been unhappy. But I was thinking about this at the weekend so much so, I even put it on the running order because I take notes during the week that I nick from the chat. But this was my thought. We've got on Friday, we're doing Premier League Team of the Season on Friday.
Yeah.
But I've also got something I want to bring in, which is brilliant for the podcast, about another thing that the Premier League are trying to sweep under the carpet that's a huge problem. And it's sort of close to this, but you'll have to listen on Friday. The January, I think, has killed Spurs for a different reason. You know, we talk about injuries for some clubs and we talk about VAR for some clubs. I actually think when you look at Spurs, January has done them in. Son went to the Asia Cup. Sarr and Basuma went to the African Nations Cup. And then you had Maddison, who had that bad injury. And I don't think any of those players, compared to what they were in the first half of the season, they've been back and you can go, oh, they've got all those players. But Basuma's not the player he was before Christmas. Son isn't. Maddison's not before the injury. Sarr's not either. And I don't know whether anybody else has been in that situation.
But it's just the squad's light as well, though, isn't it? Like we were having serious talks the other week about the strength of the Aston Villa squad because the amount that they've invested in that, and I think they can really build on that with Champions League football and all that can bring. Spurs just need another season of bringing in numbers, but good numbers in the right areas.
I think they've lost their rhythm. Because I remember they got a load of injuries in November and people were like, that's Spurs done. But they still managed to get results. Then they hit January, they brought Werner in and Dragosin in. And you thought, players coming back, they're going to be really strong in the second half of the season. And they actually haven't.
No. Big Ange there saying, quit your shit, mate.
You're absolutely correct, mate. Keep going on, you cobber. You've absolutely nailed that, man.
Shitbag.
I don't know what I'm saying, man. I do think it's worth looking at how the drop-off of Spurs basically happened post-February.
I can't stand...
But then you look at Man City, they had no players either. And look, Man City injuries in their treble season dropped from the season before. So, look, we can all...
Yeah, but then criticize... They probably got the largest... How many people going to the Copa America and Euros this summer?
But in season, is that by design?
Then you have a slow August.
Yeah, well, in season, is it by design?
But also Big Ange is, you know, philosophy is so like physically.
Well, look at Salah as well at Liverpool. I know he got injured at the AFCON. He's not been the same. I think there's a lot of players that went and played in the AFCON and in the Asia Cup in January. Hwang Hee-chan is another one at Wolves. Yeah, but predominantly he was on fire before. I don't know. Look, it's not our job to talk about the why that is, but I think when I identify something, I think there's a direct correlation between certain players who were really good up until Christmas, went away in January, yeah, and have not been as good. And I think that it's another conversation to say football about, isn't it? But yeah, it's look, just very, very quickly, I want to talk about relegation, the title, and European spots. David Moyes. Yes. Look, very niche. This is what we do. We talk about everything. I heard an interview with David Moyes that was replayed this morning on the radio that he said about 2 months ago, the contract's there for me to sign. I just don't want to sign it at the moment.
Right.
So he could have signed a contract and then they're now parting mutual ways. So,
but do you think it's one of those contracts of like, oh, you can stay, but you're on less money, or you can stay, but it's a 1 year deal? There must be something that was like something that's been disparaging towards him to be like,
but you must understand it. You know, when you go to work and, you know, people put up with you but don't actually like you.
Yeah, I understand that very well.
That's my point. So I just wonder if David Moyes thinks, well, I've just won a European trophy with West Ham and I've got them into the top half of the table. I'm just wondering if he's thinking, they don't really like me. This team is getting quite old. I think their average age is one of the oldest. And I wonder if David Moyes has gone, well, if I walk away from West Ham, there's still going to be a lot of people that want me. I don't need to do this for money.
No.
So maybe he takes...
Paid Man United still, any?
Maybe he takes... I mean, I'm just going to throw some names out now. But if he went and took a Brentford job or... and I know it's not available. What I'm saying is there might be a team in the bottom half of the Premier League where their fans would love David Moyes and would put up with his style of football. And maybe he's just thinking, you know what? I don't really need this. It's a good way. It's a good time to walk away from West Ham because no one can lie with what I've done.
Yeah.
My only issue is the way I play football. Maybe I don't want it either.
Well, I text.
That's David Moyes. He's flying. Could be flying into Blues.
Moors.
Nobody likes us.
Well, I text my West Ham mate and I said, because I was like, why are you getting rid of him? Greatest manager in your recent history.
Him, don't they?
He said, run his course. Players aren't playing for him and he's falling out with the director of football. So that's that. So, which I was going to say, you know, when you were saying about getting rid of Højbjerg, because there's a thing that we've had it a lot for this weekend as Blues fans where you're in the news slightly and people who aren't au fait with anything to do with your club just throw random points out. So I was just trying to get the actual underlying things where I think West Ham fans are like, thanks for the memories. Let's bring on Lopetegui.
I think it's the right thing to do. I think Moyes has been somewhat underappreciated, but I think it's the right time.
He needs to find like his next Everton, doesn't he? Yeah. And West Ham has been that, to be fair, and he's took him to that point.
And West Ham fans have got every
right to
demand.
Surely you just get pissed off, but then I suppose you have had Man United, but then you only didn't even have a season.
Sure, I think he's got the right. I think he's earned the right to. I think West Ham fans have got the right to say they want to play a better brand of football, and apparently it's going to be Lopetegui.
Yeah.
Let's quickly just round up. Get on the comments for this. This is going to be your second to last chance to do it. Who's winning the league? Who's getting top four? Who's getting the Europa League and who's getting relegated? So let's start off with the league. Where are you at the moment?
Who's going to win the league?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sticking with Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Man City. Arsenal, just boringly, I think Man City will win every single game.
Well, I came into today.
Look what they did to Wolves.
A couple of weeks ago, I did that thing.
Oh, Haaland.
Get your hands off me.
What a petulant little shit. Well, he's not little. If he walked in here, he'd be like, are you calling a little shit, Jimmy?
He's from Norway.
Oh, I thought he was one of those who have a really strong English accent because he was brought up over here, like Kasper Schmeichel.
Well, he's got a little bit of a Yorkshire twang. But yeah, Roy Keane again going off of him because he walked off the pitch. I didn't see the incident, but apparently...
Look, at the end of the day, I know you're going to go in on Keane on it. And I sort of... It's interesting because you've got this Haaland-Keane thing that is almost becoming a little bit like the WWE. They almost need to get in a ring.
It's very good long-term storytelling, which the WWE are fantastic at the moment.
I almost feel like the Premier League has become a little bit like the WWE.
I think it needs to learn from the WWE because the storylines are already dead by the end of the season.
Yeah. The VAR, though, is just almost comical. Like, let's give this goal and not this goal. But look, yeah, the Keane thing just seems very personal to Haaland, and Haaland's almost trying not to get involved, but then does react to it. But basically, he'd scored 4 goals, or was it 5 goals?
Scored 4 goals.
And he got subbed by Pep, and he was really angry about it. And I just thought, you know what? Fair play to Pep. And I don't normally say this, but I think that that's really arrogant and petulant from Haaland, which is fine in a striker, but he wants to stay on because he wants to score more goals. You've scored 4 goals. Mm. You're in a title race. And there are other players that do need minutes. It's not unusual. And he wants to stay on and keep scoring goals. I accept some people would say, well, that's absolutely fine. But once you've been took off, grow up. You know, petulance, throwing things around.
But every other striker this would happen to would be like, oh, he's great because he just wants to stay on and score goals. But because it's Keane in having a go at Haaland, and then you've got your tinted glasses on because it's Roy Keane, turned into like Haaland's being petulant, and he won't do it again, and it probably is wrong to do it, but he probably, you know, when like we used to play a team when I played for Meadow Park, and it'd be like 24-25 nil every time. You wanted to stay on the pitch, didn't you? And probably against Wolves when it was getting near the end of the game, he thought, I mean, to be fair, his fourth goal was
great.
Yeah, and his header was great. Obviously, the other two were pens. So he probably had a sniff and he was like, I want a bit of this smell.
I tell you what, though, that's just everybody who criticises Haaland as not being a good striker. It's almost the niche argument, isn't it? Because I've said, you know, he wouldn't start for this team and he can be quite redundant if he's not given the service. But if you give him the service in the right area, that's why, for me, he's the best penalty box striker in the world. You know, you don't smash the Premier League record, he's going to get the Golden Boot again. It's almost like people think he's like, I don't know, Ivan Toney, the Norwegian Ivan Toney. He's not. And he is the best penalty box striker in the world. He just needs the service, and he showed that against Wolves. But no, I think it's petulant. But look, ultimately, I think Haaland's going to leave Man City in the next 2 years.
What, to go to Real Madrid?
I don't know where he's going to go. But the whole point was to come to the Premier League, smash it, and then go to the next league. But then you look at it and you go,
maybe they just do a player swap with Jude Bellingham.
Real Madrid don't need him now. They've got Mbappe, do they?
Well, they've still not technically got him.
Yeah, I don't know where he'd go, actually. Maybe he will stay long term. But
maybe he's more of a Barcelona man.
Yeah, I think if Arsenal win all their games, Man City will win all their games and win the league.
Obviously, well, I was trying to come to this cause a couple of weeks ago. I was like, reasons to be optimistic, and Wolverhampton Wanderers was one of those games where I said, look, they've beaten them already this season. That didn't come to fruition. Fulham next.
What did they do at the weekend?
0-0. Didn't watch those highlights.
No.
It'd been sad enough.
Terrible VAR. I mean, there was probably a horrific VAR in there that we can't even moan about.
But I was just trying to think of ways Fulham could do Man City. But
they've got Fulham and Man City away, Spurs away. I mean,
Spurs is the one, but then it's the, like we were talking of the backdrop of Spurs are going to probably not roll over for them. But if you're Spurs and present Arsenal with your first league title in how many years?
Well, Man City win the league, I think. Then obviously Arsenal second, Liverpool third. So fourth place, Villa 7 points clear of Spurs with 3 to go.
Yeah, Spurs got a game in hand. But
yeah, I mean, they could.
Villa will do enough.
Yeah,
Villa will hold them off. It's like the end of a boxing match, isn't it? Now they've got the points on the board. They're just you stay away, you bastard.
But I think that's the annoying thing, isn't it? Because I think when like Newcastle and Chelsea look at Spurs, they'll go, God, look at the points we've dropped this season. We could have got them.
Yeah.
And I think Spurs will look at Villa losing again and go, look at the points they're dropping. I think below third, it's been. I mean, I think a fifth place has got 60 points, which is bloody abysmal with 4 games to go. You know, I've seen fifth place get 72 points.
No, but I think, yeah, but sometimes it's like high 70s and 80s used to win the Premier League. Mm. So it's almost we're getting too used to this 100 points generation.
It's a competitive league below the top two, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I agree with you. Villa will get fourth.
Relegation-wise, the news this morning that Forest appeal has been rejected. So they are still 3 points above Luton Town going into the final 3 games of the season.
Yeah, and Luton just needed to beat Everton. Luton just haven't picked the points up, have they? Over the last three or four weeks.
I think out of all of them, they've done...
Forest beating Sheffield United was massive.
Yeah, they've done the best that they coming into a season late.
Burnley blowing it as well at Newcastle, to Newcastle.
I think Luton deserves a lot of credit for this season.
I think the same 3 go down. What about, actually, just very, very quickly, let us know what you think about the relegation and the title race. But Ipswich promoted with Leicester. Playoffs are going to, I think Southampton in the playoffs. But do you see any of them staying up next season?
Oh, yeah, definitely next. Well, it depends how many points Leicester get. Ipswich will be the Luton. Yeah. Everyone will get behind them, want them to do well. We've said how many times...
I'd love Ipswich.
If you're coming up as an attacking team, it's okay sticking with your philosophy like Burnley have done, but that's not worked wonders for them. So you have got to be a bit more pragmatic. The size of Leicester, if they can avoid or get a minimal points deduction, I think they'll just slot back in, really. I'll be looking next year at teams like Brentford, Fulham, who else up there?
I don't see Fulham and Brentford. Forest maybe.
Forest next yeah. season, and then if Leeds come up or Southampton, I think they'll very much firmly slip back in. So it's.
I think whoever comes up, the biggest thing, as we've seen with the likes of Ollie Watkins and Ivan Toney when he's been back, if you've got a striker, you've got a great chance of staying up. Like if you've got someone who can put the ball in the back of the net, Burnley's massive problem has been that.
Yeah, but also, was it the start of the season when they, I think they had a really tough running, but they were just shipping so many goals. Mm. It's like if you can play some of the top six, top seven sides and just keep it to two or three, like it does, even psychologically, just you, that start of the season for Burnley, like it's only the last week or two we've been like, oh, they might stay up because it was so catastrophic at the start. And then, yeah, I was actually watching the League Two playoffs next season because I was like, oh, we might be playing one of these sides next year.
Mm. Birmingham. Have we got any Prats of the Week? Or have you just completely forgotten it?
The whole Blues side.
Yeah.
Howard Webb.
Why is he a Pratt?
Ooh, from your foul-mouth rant last
night.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just trying to think if there's any individual Pratt of the Week. Maybe we throw it over to the comments, get in with your Pratt of the Week, because we've sort of missed it this week in relation to who we would have as Pratts of the Week.
Well, I was coming in strong with just the Blues side, just for obvious reasons for... severe relegation.
I get bored myself of sort of throwing it to the PGMOL, but I just thought that the one that really stood out to me, and there were some terrible ones this weekend, was if we'd have been in the Bromley Solihull Moors final and we'd seen that tackle on Saka and the referee had said played on, I'd get it because it's like the referee's missed it. But to watch it three times on a slow-mo and them to give a drop ball, I'm just like, it had every element of a red card in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's out of control. It's reckless. It catches him. Mm. If it had given a yellow, I'd have said, what a prat. You've got that wrong. But to give nothing in a drop ball, and you've got the replays on. And also, actually, take it further. I wanted Arsenal to win. They absolutely dominated Bournemouth and they deserve to win. And I hate it when Arsenal fans would be listening to this and say, oh, leave Havertz alone. I've just said you should have had a red card on Saka. There is absolutely no way that that was a penalty because anybody that's played any level of the game knows exactly what Havertz did. And I applaud it. He's dragged this. You don't run by dragging your foot along the ground. He's bought that penalty. And again, the referee on the pitch might give it. But the VAR should know, like the whole world knows, that he's bought that. So I think, yeah, for me, the standout, although a lot of people said there was a lot of other games, which I'll put my hands up, I didn't watch. There was apparently some bad decisions, but that one for me was just...
What about me, Pratt of the Week? Going to St Andrews on Saturday, get relegated and then come to Wembley and put my bad curse on the Moors and they don't go up.
Yeah. I didn't really want to mention it because I know that you're sad.
I'm all right. I'm quite optimistic for next season. Shrewsbury Town away. Got a lot of friends there. That'd be a lovely day out.
Yeah. Exeter.
Obviously Wrexham. Yeah. Too big. That Tom Brady versus Ryan Reynolds. We got mentioned in the roast of Tom Brady. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Bill Belichick came out and said that we were a bag of shit. So
you've got to, look, sometimes you've got to go down to get back up, haven't you? That's what she said. Yeah, and I think that... The only dangerous thing for people like Birmingham City when you go down. Look, Man City went down there, didn't they?
Blackburn, Leicester. Yeah. Walking out the ground on the big screens, the celebrations of Ipswich Town.
Yeah.
They've literally just done the double bounce.
Yeah. And also, if you look at Wrexham, they got promoted into League Two, straight into League One. Momentum can be a thing. And if you survive relegation, maybe next season would be a mid-table, whereas actually... If you know, you're not in the championship next year, but if you get promoted, you'll have more momentum going into the championship than maybe a mid-table finish anyway.
And we get to be part of the Bristol Street Moors Trophy next season.
Cool. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. Should we do the quiz?
Yeah, the quiz. I won last week, didn't I? Took a 1-0 lead in the quiz.
Yeah.
It's with producer Niall, who's trying to make a name for himself as an influencer. Question number one will be, who do you want to go to first?
We'll go with... You, I'm keeping the context in. Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're starting with you, Will. Okay. Birmingham City. Since their establishment in 1875, how many times have they been relegated?
Fucking hell. Well, I've been alive for 2, 3. I'll go 9.
Is he right?
No.
I will say 12.
Incorrect. 14.
Ooh, I was close.
I was being pessimistic. No, optimistic.
14 relegations.
Oh, God.
And for you, Mark, after the 4-0 defeat, how many defeats have Man United had this season?
Oh, see, I can happily get this wrong because I ignore them. I think it's about... you're going to get this wrong, if I get it wrong. I think it's 14.
It's wrong.
Ooh. 13.
Correct.
Yeah.
I knew it. 1-0, Jimmy.
We're sticking with Man United. What is Casemiro's tackle success percentage?
Fucking
to the hell. Nearest 10, we'll go.
75%.
Incorrect.
Yeah, I'll go with 50%.
It is 58%.
There you go. So
you
I get
a
that.
Point.
Yeah. Oh, well. 1-1.
So don't do them questions again.
It's obviously not high. He's had a shit season. Yeah, you're putting him in the bloody Rodri category. Yeah. You're Rodney. You're
should,
a Pratt.
He should be.
You're Plonker.
He scored 2 goals in his last game, but how many goals does Nicholas Jackson have this season?
Oh, I think he's got 12.
He doesn't.
14?
Okay. He doesn't. He has 13.
No! Oh, split it.
Oh.
Still 1-1.
Is it back to you, Will?
Yeah.
Okay.
You
so...
got to be right. You got to be good quiz management there.
Question three,
and you got to know the scores.
I'm just keeping it light.
Okay.
So you were both at the game at the weekend for Solihull Moors Bromley.
Wow.
Can you please name all 3 full name goal scorers?
Michael Cheek, Jamie Osborne, and I can tell you the surname of the other one, but I'm
going to need a full name.
Ian Sarabia.
That is incorrect.
Oh, Sarabia.
It's Sabara, isn't it? The surname.
Yeah.
And his first name is...
Chris?
Leroy. I don't know.
It's Joe.
Oh, it's Joe. Okay, still 1-1. My question, 3.
So sticking with that game, who scored the winning penalty for Bromley?
Oh.
It's my question.
I know. He's gone viral there. Did you see? Because apparently he put an EFL armband on.
Yeah.
Because they were going to say, I'm going up before he took the penalty.
I thought it was the eyebrow rise. That was quite smooth.
Yeah, the eyebrow rise, and then he had an EFL armband.
I don't know any of the names players, so I'm just going to say Cheek because it wasn't him.
It was not him.
It's like a... Is it Morsi or something?
It was Webster.
Back to you. Question 4.
So we're going for Premier League now, Arsenal, Man United. You got the famous 8-2 game. Who scored for Arsenal in that game? I'm going to need both of the scorers.
Welbeck was still
this
with
is
you,
really niche.
It? Yeah. I'll go for Van Persie and Theo Walcott.
Correct.
Fuck
both
off. Of
them. No, that's right. That's
really?
Both of them. Yeah.
I applaud that.
That's good, that, isn't it? Because yeah. I have pulled that out of my dirty arse after 8 Guinness.
Question 4.
So for this season, the last game this season for Arsenal United, who scored the last goal for Arsenal in the 90 plus 11th?
I know Odegaard scored, but it wasn't the winner.
I think I've got
it. Is it Martinelli?
Nope.
Declan Rice?
Yes. No.
Oh, I thought he did.
Bit of a trick one because Gabriel Jesus got that little late one after Rice got the winner.
Right. Oh, yeah, Rice was the little when they all messed up the defending, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was marked on the back post.
That was when, was it Evans and Maguire was the back four, wasn't
it? Yeah, they were crap that night, day.
Still keeping it light then, so where are we at the minute?
It's 2-1 to Will, and this is the last question each.
So how many times, we're in for the Champions League now, by the way.
Champions League.
How many times have PSG been knocked out in the round of 16? Since their Qatari takeover in 2011?
3.
Incorrect.
Actually in the round of 16?
Yeah.
So they've been owned by them for over a decade. I would say round of 16. You said 3. I'll say 6.
5.
Oh, lucky. So I've won.
No, I've still got my question.
Okay.
In the Arsenal Invincible season, the context for this was a bit Bayern Leverkusen stuff, but straight into it, who knocked out Arsenal in Europe for the Invincible season?
Oh,
Dortmund.
No.
I wonder. Porto.
Chelsea.
Oh, Chelsea. There you go.
That was the Ranieri team.
You found a quiz that you're good at.
Well, you've got a better superior football knowledge than you.
Do you want the ultimatum number one?
Yeah, right. Go on then.
What was the attendance at the Solihull Moors Bromley game?
Oh, do you want to go first?
I would go with 24,000.
23,800.
23,374.
Yes.
So that's very nice.
Yeah. I did sort of remember hearing it. Well done to Will. Make sure in the comment, well done to Niall as well. Good quiz.
Cheers.
He's better than Jamie. Let's look, loads for you to get your comments in on there. If you are new to the podcast, make sure you give us a follow and give us 5 stars. That would be appreciated. We're back on Thursday at 5 o'clock. We're going to do Premier League team of the season, and also I've got a really niche big thing to talk about as well, as we look forward to the penultimate Premier League weekend of the season. Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
And thank you to all of you. Remember, this is important. This sort of thing is dying out, so get involved. Speak soon. Bit like
an animal.
Yeah, what's dying out?
Them pigs on Clarkson's farm.
Oh, don't talk to me about that.